Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of mind power. We have a topic today that I know so many of you would say, boy, it sure is appropriate for our world as it is today. And what is that particular topic? It is conscience. My guest is Dr. Xavier. He is a medical doctor, and he's really been very much involved in working with people on multiple levels through the years. But he decided he was going to put into writing thoughts about fulfillment using real conscience. And Deepak Chopra said this is a very practical guide for anyone interested in self-empowerment through psychological and spiritual evolution. Dr. Xavier, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Now, I am incorrect. You're not a medical doctor. You're a psychiatrist.
Right.
And so there is a difference. But you've been involved in psychiatry for over 30 years.
That's right.
You've worked with people from different cultures, from around the world. And to you, this is a topic that really is a global topic. Why, with your busy schedule, did you decide to put pen to paper, or should I say fingers to computer buttons, and put this down so that you could communicate your thoughts to other people? Why was this important? Why now?
Well, you know, there is a lot of confusion about conscience. You know, that's why I use the phrase real conscience. Because, you know, a lot of times people think what they pick up from their family and society as their conscience. But it's really not. You know, we have two judging mechanisms. One is real conscience, and the other is what is called superego. Superego doesn't mean super pride. The superego is the socially programmed judgment of right and wrong. You know, the standard of superego and conscience may be same in some, you know, in many things,
mm-hmm.
But it may be quite different. You know, one may pick up a lot of wrong ideas about right and wrong from family and society, and the extremists, you know, are a good example. You know, they think a lot of the really terrible things they do is right, and it's right according to the way their superego judges. But if they use conscience, they would say it's not. And of course, you know, in a lot of everyday choices, people either don't use their real conscience, or they may be acting just based on their feeling, you know, feelings connected with any kind of need, you know. So not only psychiatric patients, but people in general make a lot of wrong choices or unfair, unreasonable choices, either because of their superego gives the wrong kind of judgment, or because they are acting just based on their feeling.
I thought
it will be very helpful, you know, for people to, you know, understand that.
I agree. And your paradigms that you present, I think,
right,
are thoughtful, and also they allow people to examine without judgment, perhaps
right,
some particular thoughts they have. Now, I want to quote from your book that using religious dogmas, I've put in my own political dogmas, any kind of a dogma,
right,
usually has had such negative connotations.
Right.
It supports racism, sexism, unfair caste systems, colonialism, terrorism, unjust wars, all of these things that really are not a healthy action, not a balance action.
Right.
And so many times it takes us years to learn how to think and to even be aware of what
right.
you call real conscience, depending on the environments we're in.
That's right. It's
really
not
a
easy
challenge.
You know, we human beings have the capacity to use reason and empathy and compassion and love, you know, in judging. But, you know, the thing is, you know, we get so programmed by family and society, and the stronger the programming, the more difficult to use conscience, you know. But we can also, you know, the culture can be conducive or can stimulate conscience, you know. Religious groups, for example, you know, religious groups can stimulate conscience, promote conscience, or they can create and promote a religious superego, where a particular way of dressing or diet or, you know, something becomes so important, and then they may not pay attention to the spirit of the golden rule.
Mm-hmm. You had a statement in here that I thought was great. There was an old saying, when the mystic points to the moon, the idiot see only the finger.
Right.
I laughed. I laughed when I heard that, when I thought, that
and
is,
you know,
so
I have
true.
A joke. I have a joke about it that the, you know, since we are on radio, I can say this, I think, you know, that the extremist idiots see the middle finger, you know.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Right. Because, you know, they miss not only the deeper meaning, that they also, you know, even twist the concrete meaning to fit their need or their group's need, and you know, kind of not really use reason and compassion.
You had a patient by the name of Doug that you were working with. Tell us about how you were able to help him recognize his real conscience. You know, some people listening to us would say, wait a minute, you're talking about programming, this type of thing. Isn't this a kind of reprogramming that you're talking
about?
Right,
it's a reprogram, yeah.
So this is a good way of approaching it. Let's talk about Doug's story.
Right. He was addicted to, you know, drugs, and then he was in all kinds of programs, rehabilitation programs, because his parents could afford it. But he was very defensive in those programs. He won't really open his mind and you know, really use the 12 steps, for example. So, he was defending against feeling guilty. I had to explain to him that guilt can be really healthy. You know, the guilt can be healthy if we really recognize that we are making wrong choices and getting wrong consequences, and then a healthy guilt will move us to make better choices, and then we feel better about the change we are making. Anyway, and then I try to stimulate some guilt in him, because he was, you know, avoiding guilt by all kinds of arguments. You know, he would find some fault with the therapist or with the group or something, and he wouldn't really, you know, face, you know, the kind of wrongdoings he was doing. I made him write down the list of, you know, the really bad choices he had made and what kind of consequence it had on himself and other people. And since I had explained to him guilt can be useful, he, you know, was able to, instead of evading guilt, he did write down, and he started thinking, and also incidentally he had respect for me from an intellectual side, because he was pretty intellectually oriented person, and
mm-hmm.
and he realized, you know, I was coming from that approach, and so he opened up, and he once he started really facing his guilt, the more he could look into the bad choices he had made and the consequences, then we were able to look at what is the pattern, why he was doing it, and how his he was making a lot of choices just based on his feelings, and then he would avoid guilt by all kinds of arguments, and so I was able to get him to face the guilt and face the wrong things, you know, that the step four of the 12 steps, and then how to work on his defect of character. With the 12 steps, he had issue with organized religion, so the idea of a higher power, he had some conflicts, but he was able to go with the idea of using his own conscience and now that way to use reason and the sense of fairness. So that way I was able to turn him around and work on his character defect. Part of his character defect was using his intellectual side in protecting his false pride rather than, you know, really using reason and empathy and compassion. So that's how I helped him, you know, to use his conscience.
You have a beautiful story in here about an emperor.
Right.
And I realize that
yes.
With the male-female, there is a much different orientation, both physiologically, psychologically.
Right,
there are
right.
certain patterns with each of the sexes. I'm not saying it's 100%, but in
right,
general,
right.
that there are those patterns. The emperor Ashoka, from the 3rd century B.C., you really had a great deal of admiration for his story. H.G. Wells wrote about him, saying that he was one of the greatest of kings, the historian H.G. Wells. But this is a man whose story was quite interesting. Tell us what happened to this emperor. It's a shame more people don't follow his example. But
Well, Emperor
let's
Ashoka.
Talk about that.
Yeah, Ashoka inherited a large empire, you know, stretching from Afghanistan to some of the southern parts of India. And he was a very dynamic person, ambitious person. He wanted to conquer more territory, and so he invaded a neighboring kingdom. Instead of celebrating victory, he looked at the suffering he caused. Something like 100,000 people had died in the battle. And so he felt guilty about all the suffering he caused. And he touched his heart, he stimulated his conscience. He decided that he will not do any such military action again. And he became a Buddhist, and he practiced the kind of ideals of compassion and promoting goodness. It's so much so, you know, he had encouraged the planting of trees and so on. He's considered one of the first environmentalists. He had provisions for education of women and uplift of disadvantaged minorities. He had clinics for animals, hospitals for people, and so on. So that's why H.G. Wells, the world historian, called him the greatest king in all of history, because of all the, you know, for 28 years after his transformation, he ruled in such an admirable way. Although he became Buddhist, he didn't push Buddhism, by his power as an emperor. He promoted basically goodness, you know, the basic elements of morality, and not Buddhism as such. In his own personal life he did, he sent his children to some of the other neighboring countries to promote Buddhism, but he didn't use his political power to push Buddhism. He promoted basic human goodness.
You make a statement that we have to be careful to relate to others based on reality of a situation rather than just our feelings. And I don't know of anyone who will be in a situation that automatically starts making judgments. I mean, it's just a natural part, I think, of our survival kit. And we just
right.
go there, okay, someone's wearing yellow, I hate yellow, they have to have a problem.
Right.
It can be as ridiculous as that. Well, these
yeah.
thoughts come in, but we can stop ourselves and say, wait a minute, I don't have all the information.
Right.
Tell us how someone can really modulate those kinds of feelings so that they are not just reacting out of a reaction. I mean, I've known a number of people that they'll smell something, they will see something, there's an automatic recoil, and
right.
it's tough to get past that because it's hardwired in. What would you recommend a person do to start to switch that hardwiring?
Right, you know, to become more aware of, more conscious of our reactions, you know, these feelings. Feelings are useful in terms of it makes us aware of a situation, like fear makes us aware of danger. So it gives, feelings give a signal, and it motivates us to do something useful. But we can, instead of automatically reacting based on feelings, we can use conscience, we can become more aware of, okay, this is what the feelings are you know, this, we get this signal and this motivation, but is that based on real reality or some bad experience from the past or something that is really related to the current reality. So being aware of the, you know, that we cannot simply, it's not useful to simply react based on feelings, that we can use understanding and conscience to choose what, you know, even what feelings we hold on to, what feelings we let go, what steps we take in terms of action, and, you know, even thoughts, you know, thoughts and feelings come up in the mind, but we don't have to entertain them if we think it is not useful.
Crisis is often the opportunity for transformation. I'm quoting from your book. And you say, we usually change because we see the light, a vision for a better life, or feel the heat of suffering caused by our old patterns. And I liked your illustration about hog farmers. They say a pig looks up only when it's hit on the head.
Right.
And that's one of their sayings. I don't know that that's absolutely true, but the point is people sometimes can be so hard-headed and so entrenched in particular patternings that they literally have to be hit with a 2x4 from the universe, maybe swatted a couple of times until they go, duh, I think maybe I should pay attention. We've all been there. We all go through that at one time or another. But relative to this, being hit in the head, there are so many people. I was just talking with someone earlier today, and you talk about addictions are examples of excessive attachments. And addiction is something I think they try to tag onto just about everything anymore. But there are some very serious situations with addictions, you know, with alcoholism, and sometimes it's medication, sometimes it's, you know, different types of drugs. And there's all kinds of subjects that can be concerned with addiction. But how does attachments go hand in hand with addiction?
Well, the attachment to comfort and pleasure and, you know, sometimes, you know, the group thing or company, some people would be afraid of withdrawal symptoms, you know, in especially in alcohol and opiate addiction and so on. So, you know, to stay comfortable, they keep on, you know, with the addiction. So the attachment to the comfort and this particular way of life, and usually, you know, then the person develops all kinds of character defects, you know, they often do other wrong things too, you know, cheat and lie and manipulate to keep the addiction going. So the attachment in that sense, you know, they get so emotionally caught up with this, you know, pattern.
You have some information of what you call the Second Parliament of World Religions, which I found interesting that you brought up. It was held in Chicago in 1993, 100 years after the first parliament.
Right.
And there was something very specific that came out of it. What was their declaration for global ethics?
The declaration for global ethics, that was led by the theologian Hans Küng. Basically, they were promoting the spirit of the golden rule, you know, applied in modern situations, you know, like promoting equality of men and women, the promotion of fairness in work situations, honesty, those basic ethical principles of all religions. That parliament, there were people from, I think it was 125 or so different faith traditions and many, you know, great thinkers and writers and so on. This was the global ethics was one of the main agendas they promoted.
You have some fascinating details that you bring out. One of the areas that you covered about real conscience was dealing with all the various isms, whether it's racism, sexism, etc. And you bring up the gender roles, which I think in our world today, sometimes there's a lot of confusion because for so many generations, women were in a particular little typical box description. And if you were out of that box, then you were weird, abnormal. And then it's the same with the men. And so in our culture today, we are finding there are a lot of different components that have evolved, and some people get very frustrated. But I would say that some of the changes have really been very good because you bring out the point men were allowed to physically punish their wives. And in many cultures throughout the world at this time, this still is the rule, that they're able, in some cultures, even to kill the women
without
having any reason. They don't have to be an adulteress or anything. They just will kill them because a member of the family says it's time to get rid of them. And then you talk about English law, that at some time the phrase rule of thumb comes from the law that allowed men to beat their wives with twigs not wider than their thumb. I mean, these are things that, to me, are just appalling, that are still in place in parts of the world, and culturally, the women even buy into it because they are just so, for all intents and purposes, brainwashed, as are the men, that it takes individuals that stand up to it that say, no, I mean, we had to do it here in this country. Well, this country had a lot of this stupidity in place. It took a long time before we were able to pass it along. And that brings me to another point in your book where you say people who are too attached to their roots can become stuck like trees in their traditional identity, and that stifles any kind of opportunity for growth and development. And you say, in addition to roots, we have shoots. Boy, is that the truth. You must encounter a number of people that are caught between different paradigms and are scared to death because they don't want to be wrong and they don't want to be hated, and gee whiz, they don't want Aunt Lucy to be upset with them because they decided to wear green instead of purple. I mean, these are things that we have to contend with every day. How does conscience, how can someone wade their way through this to be able to be at peace with what they accept for themselves?
Yeah, the one of the keys in using conscience is an open mind. You know, because if the mind is closed, then you know we cannot use our reason and the sense of fairness properly. And also, it's important to be able to look at our choices and also what is important and more important and less important. You know, all these things can be twisted by cultural conditioning. If we look at the right wing and left wing extremes, and both sides seem to have such a hard time seeing the whole picture or the broad picture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they get so emotionally attached to their own particular angle of argument or their particular tunnel vision, and have such a unrealistically negative impression about the other side, and so they keep in some ways they seem to keep reinforcing each other, because one extreme, if the extreme left wing does something, then the extreme right wing react to it, and so the middle ground gets damaged.
Sometimes I think children have a lot more wisdom than most adults, especially when you get into those kind of environments. Hatred, prejudice, distorts views. I agree with you 100%. Hatred is an insidious poison that blinds the very capability of clear thinking. I've seen it in my own life, and I've known many, many, many people throughout my counseling career that have been affected by hatreds and prejudices. And it's something I just almost think it's part of what I call the human school of experience that we have to grow up and out of. And I really like Gandhi's statement of be the change. If you don't want to see that, you have to be mindfully present about yourself and how you live your life so that you can make a difference by demonstrating what is most important. Dr. Xavier, your book has so many different components to it that I really think that it's next to impossible to be able to go into, a lot of in-depth detail, but you've got wonderful stories that you use as examples. You have a lot of thoughtful observations, both as a counselor and one that does a great deal of public speaking, and you're not afraid to be out front with what you perceive. Do you have a website that people can go to so they can learn more about you and your book?
Right. www.realconscience.com.
Realconscience.com. Well, I know that we're just about out of time here. Dr. Xavier, do you have a comment you'd like to leave with my listening audience today before we close on your book, Fulfillment Using Real Conscience?
Well, we are all, making choices, throughout our waking hours, and if we make choice using the guidance of conscience, that, our lives can be a whole lot more fulfilling than if we choose without conscience.
Thank you very much, Dr. Xavier.
Thank you, Donna.
Your being with me today. It's been a pleasure having you as a guest. Check out his website, realconscience.com, his book, Fulfillment Using Real Conscience. If you find yourself questioning about many things, then this is a good read for you. It's thought-provoking and also will maybe help you get over the hump if you're finding that you're encountering some challenges culturally or otherwise. You might want to add this book to your library. Again, Dr. Xavier, thank you so much for being my guest. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? these are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says Glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says Glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Boy, are we going to have a dynamic hour for you. We have a guest, Jeff Warrick, and Jeff and I just recently made a connection. There's a very special event that's going on in Seattle starting, actually, on the 4th of June, and it is a film festival, independent film festival, and Jeff had put together a film, which I just finished reviewing this afternoon, called Programming the Nation. It is absolutely awesome. And I want those of you listening in the state of Washington to know that we have got some free passes for you, that if you are interested in attending this wonderful event while you're here in Seattle, that's going to be the case. But meanwhile, we've got Jeff on the line. And Jeff, I'm telling you, I was really impressed with the quality of the movie that you presented, and also with the many different paradigms of information, the experts that you had, one of whom is Eldon Taylor, who has been a guest on my show more than once, and you had other people as well from so many different positionings in the media industry, et cetera. It was quite impressive, and I'd recommend anybody to check this out. But you yourself, Jeff, why was this important? I mean, this is dealing with mind control, the influence of advertising, etc. What was it that made you decide that you wanted to spend the time? And by the way, how long did it take you to do all the interviews and get all this together? Give us some background.
Well, Donna, thanks for having me on, first of all. And this project was a 5-year project of ours that we started quite a while ago. I think the idea to make the movie started with 9/11, really. It was kind of an awakening for me, as I'm sure it was for a lot of people. And it got me thinking about, you know, how we were being manipulated, particularly with the beating of the drum for war. As a kid, you know, my dad had always kind of kidded around with me about how they were using these techniques in theaters to get us to, you know, eat popcorn and drink Coca-Cola. Mm-hmm. And things like that. And I think when most people think about the topic of subliminal messaging, they usually think about that, or how the letters X, E, S, E, X are hidden in ice cubes of liquor ads, those kind of urban legends, which allegedly increased the sales of those items as a result. And you know, there is some validity to these examples of subliminal messaging, mm-hmm. which we cover in our film. But I think most people are totally unaware of such issues as, you know, the decades of research that have been conducted in this field, or right. that a national, you know, congressional hearing took place to look into the use of subliminal advertising in 1984, or that no laws exist to this day which prohibit the use of subliminal advertising, or that, you know, like large department store chains have successfully used subliminal messaging to prevent shoplifting. Or that our modern military, through their psychological operations units, have the capability and have been accused of using subliminal tactics against both soldiers and civilians, both against warring countries and also here at home against American citizens. So, I mean, these are the issues that, you know, most people have no idea about. They're totally unaware of. And those are the issues that we cover in depth in our documentary, Programming the Nation. So...
One of the things I don't feel most people are aware of is that the study of psychology and how to affect people goes way, way, way back in history. The Arabs wrote about so much of this long before the Western world caught up with it. They had a deep understanding of psychological implications. And here in the Western world, we are bombarded, literally bombarded, with all kinds of information. And anyone that has worked with children or has worked in any kind of a programming format of any kind, I don't care if it's with a particular group or whether it's in politics or anything else, it's repetition, 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 over and over and over and over again until it's on automatic play. We just don't recognize that this is being done. And
absolutely.
So to be mindfully present, really, you have to stand back and say, excuse me, I'm going to listen to this. That's what a con artist relies on. They
absolutely.
Really rely on that. They rely
and
on that big
I think
time.
There's a saying that goes something along the lines of, if you tell a lie over and over and over enough times, people will believe that it's the truth. So,
mm-hmm.
And that's what we're experiencing here in today's society with mass media, the way it operates and the way it functions in a lot of levels.
You had a woman, and her name is just escaping me right at the moment, who's very much involved in media, and she does not hesitate to, was her name Anne?
Anne Simonton from
Media
Watch.
There we go. Yes, and I really appreciated her comments because she, like myself and like you, have been involved in media for a lot of years, but she's sort of a guardian, if you will, saying we have to be held accountable for things, and too often the real facts aren't being out there. Look at what happened with CNN, people saying, oh my goodness, they're not giving the right information, they're just giving clips of what they think we should see. The real truth isn't happening. And of course, in today's world, we have the internet, we have YouTube, we have people that are putting out on this electronic media information. It's just like the big hole in Guatemala that occurred this morning, that I was in a shop and someone said, did you hear about this? I said, what's this? And they, you know, blasted up on the screen. Look at this hole over 300 feet deep, and there's a bigger one that's even further on down. A whole house and a family disappeared. So we have this instantaneous capacity of getting information out there. And I think many times people sort of get jaded. They say, I can't believe half of this stuff, but yet they're watching like zombies what's on television over and over and over and over and over again. And eventually they just don't know what to do.
Therein lies the problem, I think, in a lot of ways. I mean, television can become like an addiction. It's like a drug. It's hard to get off of it. And I know myself, I'm not immune to this. I mean, I can't turn on the TV without getting sucked in totally. So I just choose not to watch it as much as possible. I mean, there's programs that I will tune into, and but it's yeah, what you say is very true. It's there's so much media available to us out there, and we just consume it like children in a candy store, I think, and
mm-hmm.
it becomes an addiction.
Well, and that's what I think happens. I mean, have any of you that are listening ever had someone that's all they do is sit on the computer and surf the web for all kinds of goodies, and you end up with 45 to 100 emails, and you're going, well, doesn't this person even get up to go to the bathroom away from their computer? I mean, for heaven's sakes, where is this thing installed where they're just fixated on it? But that is very, very true. Now, you bring out in the movie some extremely important information about children and the effect on children. And what it brought to mind was research that Napoleon Hill, who's known for his book Think and Grow Rich, he
mm-hmm.
did this research in the early 1900s, and he was told that if you give a priest, he said, give me a child up until the age of 4, and I'll have them indoctrinated for the rest of their lives. I'll
oh, that's
have
so
them.
True.
And
that's
so,
so true.
You brought that point out, and that is where we have to question. You know, I just had a guest on where we were talking about real conscience and being mindful about why we do certain things or why we have certain beliefs. Where did they come from? Why is it necessary they exist today? So your movie, I think, is absolutely amazing, Programming the Nation. Now, what I want you to do is give us some information on this special film event that's occurring in Seattle, and where you've been gracious enough to offer free passes. And talk to us about the event itself, because this is a lot bigger than I realized.
Well, the screening itself takes place Tuesday, June 8th at 7 p.m. It's screening at the Northwest Film Forum in Seattle. And myself, along with Dr. Eldon Taylor, I guess he's a Hay House International best-selling author, will both be available for Q&A there.
So what he was going to say, and he was on a computer connection, so it looks like something just disappeared into the ether. So let me just finish up for him. Jeff Warrick's film, Programming the Nation, is going to be at the Northwest Film Forum in Seattle. And you will be able to find out more about it. And I'm going to be making more and more announcements about this. This just came to my attention. In fact, I just finished reviewing the movie today. So I really encourage you to look up Programming the Nation. And there is a link that I have. I don't have it in front of me. And when I have the opportunity, I will definitely share that with you so you can check it out. But if you'd like to get a free pass to the event on June the 8th. Now, there's also two full access passes that are going to be available. That means for the entire event, which is, I bet, like 10 days. So this is going to be going on. If you want to have a pass that will allow you to attend a number of the different events and screenings and all kinds of things that are going on, panels regarding independent filmmaking, then I want you to know I've got two free full access passes and four single passes that you will be able to have. Now, what I want you to do is send me an email immediately so we can put you on the list. They have a will call, but I need you to contact me. So if you're in the Pacific Northwest and you would like to attend this phenomenal event, I want you to be in touch with me. Send it to Donna@DelphiInternational.com. Put high importance on it, and be sure to have your contact information because they'll need that at the will call office. Now, I know we lost Jeff, but we are going to be taking a break for just a moment. This is a movie that is so well done that by the time you finish watching it, it will make you more understanding about how it is you have to be responsible for what you choose to put yourself in front of and what you choose to accept. And that questioning is a very good habit to develop. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to take a break for a minute. Again, Jeff Warrick was my guest, and we lost him on the computer connection that we had. But this is all about the Northwest Film Forum. If you're in the Pacific Northwest and you want to see this movie, send me an email, Donna@DelphiInternational.com. Say, I want a free ticket, or I'd like to be able to go to any of the events. I've got two full access passes. This is Donna. We're taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at Donna@DelphiInternational.com. That's Donna@DelphiInternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.DelphiInternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is Donna@DelphiInternational.com, and her website is www.DelphiInternational.com.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Gedros. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. Telephone lines are now open. 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. I do want to let you know that this month of June, I have three scheduled interviews live with people in different parts of the country. And I wanted to let you know about it because you might want to share it with friends and they'd be able to call in and participate in the show if they so desired. On Monday, June the 7th, I'm going to be doing a show, Blog Radio, with Janice Wilson. She is going to have me on for an hour. People can call in to the number 646-652-4558. Now, that's June 7th, Monday evening, Pacific time, 7 to 8. Now, if you would like to have the link for Blog Radio for Janice Wilson, go into my website. If you didn't get my newsletter, it's in my newsletter, but if you didn't get my newsletter, go into my website, and then you will be able to have access to that link. It's listed under upcoming broadcasts and appearances. Also, on the 13th, and it might be the 20th of June, I'm not sure which day it's going to be right now, Bipolar Radio with Susan and Bert, 11 a.m. Pacific Time. This is on a Sunday. This is a live call-in talk show. You can go on Facebook and find it there, Bipolar Nation Radio on Facebook. You can listen to it live. Or you can go to latalkradio.com, latalkradio.com. Now, their call-in number is 323-203-0815. Again, 323-203-0815. On June 27th, which is a Sunday at 5:30 in the evening, Central Time, which Pacific Time, that would be 3:30 in the afternoon here, Denise Barnes is hosting the talk show Differences in Nashville, Tennessee. This is on WVOL 1470, and this is the station that Oprah Winfrey started on so many years ago. Now, this is also going to be a call-in talk show. If you wanted to call me there, at 615-737-9865. So those are the points of information regarding the live broadcast that are going to be coming up. There are going to be some more, but that's what I have information confirmed on right at this point. So if you want to have everything specifically, go into my website. Go in and pick up on the June newsletter because it's right there on the site. Go down to upcoming broadcasts and appearances, and you'll have all of that information available to you. Pass it along to friends. It's just an absolute joy for me to be able to do this. Now, tomorrow we're going to be having Trish Hatley as a guest. It is going to be music. If you like jazz, this gal is awesome. And we're going to be playing a couple of different aspects of her music. She has got a wonderful disc of music that's all about affirmations, and they are done fabulously. Then she's got a CD disc on jazz that is terrific. She's got a gorgeous voice, and it's just absolutely a delight. If you're a jazz fan like I am, you're going to thoroughly, thoroughly enjoy it. She's going to be with me on the air. Now, I'm on the road traveling for the next few days, and then on Thursday, we're going to be playing the best of Donna. So I will not be in studio on Thursday, but I'll be back with you live on Friday, and we're going to be talking about Ernest Hemingway. David Neufer is going to be my guest. Ernest Hemingway was, before my time, a good deal, but I'll tell you what, he was a man that created such phenomenal ships when it came to literature. And I remember watching the old movie with Ingrid Bergman, For Whom the Bell Tolls, a powerful, powerful movie. Well, that was his story. And there are so many other things that were done regarding what Ernest Hemingway wrote. He was an incredible man. But we're going to learn the real truth about Ernest Hemingway because David interviewed a number of people that were living that had known him up until the time he committed suicide. So we're going to give you the inside stuff on why Ernest Hemingway committed suicide and all of the other myths that have been perpetuated around this very, very famous man. So that is coming up this week, and all of the guests are listed on bbsradio.com. You just go into the Donna Sebo Show tab, and you will see who is coming up. You can review the whole month. It's right there for you to see, and you will be able to keep in touch with whatever is going on. So just stay tuned and be sure that you just know that you can check in right there. And all the shows are archived, so if you missed one, you're going to be able to pick it up later on. I've got a couple of emails that people have sent me, and I know we're pretty much out of time, almost out of time. We've got a few more minutes. So if you wanted to take a chance and give me a buzz at 888-815-9756, I would be delighted to have you do that. But I received something from Roy Williams, and I have a great deal of appreciation for this man and for his hard work. And he said, you know, a person without capital, he had written about how to make money. He said, a person without capital has nothing to leverage but his or her time. This is why millions of Americans wear the handcuffs of hourly wages. And he goes back into his own path because the question was posed, if it takes money to make money, how does one make money when he has no money at the start? He said, when he was 14, his life sold for about $1.60 an hour. At 18, it was selling for $3.35. And he said, when he was growing up, it was all about security. You want to have a steady paycheck, and you want to make sure that you don't rock the boat. You never have anything changed. But he said he had to escape from that because it didn't fit with him. Well, he's an entrepreneur, and that's the reason why. He said, there's something in every one of us that waits and listens for the sound of the genuine genius in yourself. And it's the only true guide you will ever have. And if you cannot hear it, you will spend all of your life living days on the ends of strings that someone else pulls. Now, that was adapted from a comment by Howard Thurman. Let me say that again. There is something in every one of us that waits and listens for the sound of the genuine genius in yourself. It is the only true guide you will ever have. And if you cannot hear it, you will, all of your life, spend your days on the ends of strings that someone else pulls. It's really a lifelong journey to understand the strength of who you are, to understand who you really are, and to have that commitment of integrity with yourself. This is something that takes time to learn. The guest we had today, when they were talking about using real conscience, it was very poignant when I was reading through his material because I know how long, and it's a constant job, to detach, disassociate from those tracks of thinking that do not serve me well. And if you are a person that is a thinking person, you're going to want to explore different modalities. You are going to want to expand your knowledge, your wisdom, and your understanding. That is what you should do. You should open your mind to different applications of things. That's called growth. That's called learning. Some things you may not need to change, but there are many things that we need to be consciously alert to and not be afraid to question ourselves, because there may be that little voice inside of us that says, there's something better, there's something more. This is Donna Sebo. I know we're out of time. Tomorrow we're going to be tapping the jazz scene. Yes, we are with Trish Haithley, and I welcome you. I invite you to join me. It's going to be a lot of fun. Remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Enjoy your life. Life is now. The now is what creates the tomorrow. Have a great one. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.